Hero Hype episode 47, and I am Caitlin, and I am here after a very long absence with my co-host Danya. Hi, Danya.
Hello. It's good to be back. It has really been a long time. Ugh. We suck. I suck, mostly.
We'll explain where we've been in a minute, but before we get into that, just a reminder that if you want to get in touch with us, and many of you have been asking where we are, and you have done it on Twitter, at Hero Hype Podcast, and there's also our email address, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com. All right, so where the heck have we been? We have not podcasted since before Civil War came out, Danya.
Yeah. Like I said, we suck. I suck, mostly. It's been really weird not talking about all of this stuff. Like, it really has been a long, long time since we recorded. It felt super weird not talking to you about Civil War as well.
Yeah, we need to do something about that.
Yeah, we really do. There's so much stuff that we need to catch up on. So much. I think, like, for me, part of the reason why I've been kind of AWOL is not something that I can talk about publicly yet, because I'm caught up in... I'm caught up in a court case and legal stuff that I can't really talk about publicly until it's all done. It's almost done. So I'm going to be in a good place to basically cut and dry, be like, it's behind me. I can talk about it in private. If you are a mutual friend and want to talk to me about it, I am happy to talk about it. Well, not necessarily happy to talk about it, but I will talk about it. Just hit me up on my personal accounts, but yeah, it's not something that I can put out there in public at the moment. Aside from that, I've also, well, that's kind of hit me mentally with being able to, like, get my head around stuff, but also I've kind of been all over the place over the summer. I don't think I've stayed in one place for very long.
Yeah, and since we last recorded, I lost Beau. I worked a ridiculous amount all summer. I moved into a new apartment, and I adopted a new dog. I've been quite busy as well.
Yeah, so when it kind of came to, like, me mentally feeling in the right place to, like, record, which was very fleetingly happening... you may have noticed, if you have listened to Resistance Radio as well, there have been like a couple of weeks where I peaced out of that. Some of that was down to, like, mentally not feeling up to talking to people sometimes, or I'd gotten myself sick through basically stressing myself out over things. Yeah, which, again, not great. When I did find myself mentally in the right place, just could not figure out the time to, like, make our schedules work. Because, yeah, it's just one of those things. It's real life. It happens. But I feel like we can stick to this now that TV is back. I'm pretty sure we can get back to, like, a schedule. And I think once we've got back into, like, the swing of things, and just doing it and doing it and doing it, it'll just all fall back into place. But it's kind of like falling off the wagon and trying to get back on the wagon. Getting back on the wagon is the hardest part.
Yeah, so we've been really busy, and we haven't been able to make our schedules align. That's our TLDR.
Yeah. Yeah, that is probably... I know it's going to be frustrating for some people that we can't, well, I can't talk about the main reason why I've been mostly AWOL. I will, once it's all cleared up, I will put something out there eventually, but until that point, which it may not be for another couple of weeks. I was just checking the date. But until that point, it's kind of got to stay private. So, sorry. I wish I could tell you guys more, but I can't.
But that leaves us time to talk about all kinds of hero things. So we are going to do our news. We will talk about, we'll briefly touch on the finales that we didn't get to for last season. That's how long it's been. And we'll talk about the stuff that has aired so far. So we are going to skip A Brief History this week, but it will be back once we really jump back into the swing of things. But we will start with our TV news. So I guess we could start with the DC side. So a little older piece of news, but we wanted to talk about it, was that we found out who the villain is going to be for the big four-way crossover between Arrow, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Supergirl. And it is going to be the aliens, the Dominators. So they are from a big crossover comic series in the 1980s called Invasion. So they're going to take inspiration from that and bring in these aliens to be the big enough threat that we need all of the teams to join in. And we did find out that they are not going to bring Supergirl into Earth One, basically. They're not merging the universe. So my guess is that the aliens will originate on Supergirl and then they'll somehow come into the universe where the rest of the other shows are. What do you think, Danya?
I think that's probably the most logical way, is that the aliens will start off in Supergirl and possibly somehow she'll be able to get a message to someone on the other Earth as they try to, like, get across. It's trying to figure out exactly how they're gonna logistically make it work. This is a lot of characters, like a lot of shows that they're gonna have to, like, seamlessly merge together and do it in a way that makes narrative sense. But having an alien species that is most likely to originate on Supergirl because aliens are already established there. Yeah, it's, I'm really interested to see how they're going to make this work, basically. But I'm kind of like, whatever it takes to get Kara and Barry interacting again, I'm cool with. Like, just make that happen immediately, please.
They're also teasing that Sarah's going to have a little crush on Kara, and I'm like, so here for it.
Oh my god, that would be so great. I would love that.
But Oliver is not going to like Kara because, like, aliens is just one step too far for where he can go. So he's just going to be like, I can't do it.
He's like, nope, I'm done. That's it. It's too far.
Like, magic, metahumans, whatever, I can do that. But aliens, yeah. I can't.
That's his hard line of, like, nope. Nope, we're done. Can't deal with it. Everything is too stupid.
But it's also worth pointing out that Arrow's 100th episode is going to be during this four-way crossover, and they have brought back a gazillion characters for the 100th episode. So I'm going to be interested to see how it all ties in. They're still filming it right now, too.
Yeah, I just hope that, yeah, it's great bringing all of these characters back as well to be like, yay, 100 episodes. I just hope it's not just gonna be like a parade of them and it doesn't make any sense. Hope it fits in some way rather than just it being shoehorned in because 100 episodes, yay.
Yeah, I know there Laurel is gonna be in it and Moira is gonna be in it and like, what?
So flashback.
Yeah, I don't know, but we do know that Katie Cassidy signed the deal across the shows, so I'm expecting Laurel to be brought back at some point.
Yeah, either Laurel brought back, or it's going to be alternate Laurel from one of the other Earths.
Did say in an interview that we're going to find out she's alive and well, but I don't know if that means, like, in one episode or, like, permanently. But we'll tie it, that'll tie into Sarah's story on Legends, so I guess we can get back to, come back to that. But
yeah,
there's a whole lot going on with this crossover, and I'm going to be very interested to see how it all ties together, basically.
Yeah, same.
All right, so that being said, we have some more Supergirl news. So the rest of the DC news is Supergirl, basically. So we found out that James is going to be suiting up as Guardian. So he is going to decide that... Kreisberg says he's going to realize that being a photographer is not enough for him. He's going to decide he can no longer sit back and be a sidekick. So he's going to decide to become a vigilante. And so he's going to team up with Wynn. And Wynn is going to be his man in the van, is what Kreisberg calls him.
Oh my God.
So they're going to be hilarious, apparently, which I can totally see. And then... But James is going to keep his nighttime activities a secret from Kara, and Kara's not going to be super approving of vigilantes. And then we also got our first look at his costume, which the CW promo photos tend to be really terrible, so I'm just going to hope it looks better in action.
Yeah, I was going to say that he's tied with Diggle for worst helmet in the CW superhero shows.
At least Diggle's getting a new helmet, so...
Yeah.
But, I mean, their promo photos tend to not be great, so we'll see. But what do you think of this turn for James's character?
I don't dislike it. I think it gives him a slightly more active role than a passive one. Though I do think that it's always been very interesting that James Olsen has kind of taken on almost the traditional love interest role in Supergirl in respect to, like, how his interactions have been with Kara and the fact that, you know, mostly all he does is, like, stand around and dole out wisdom and give that connection back to Superman at certain points. But now we don't really need him in that role because Superman has come to the show. So they had to think of something to do with him that wasn't just having him, like, basically standing there looking pretty. Which I do appreciate on some level that he is incredibly pretty, but... My only thing is that I hope that the fact that we've got these more active roles for all of these new male characters coming into the show around Supergirl, I'm hoping that setting that up doesn't take too much away from her, especially with Mon-El being a thing this season as well. So... On the one hand, I'm interested to see James take a more active role. On the other hand, I'm hoping it doesn't take away from Supergirl. But considering how they handled Superman in the premiere episode, I can stow those concerns because they handled that incredibly well. Like, he was an unbelievably engaging character in his own right, but it was very obvious that he was there as support to Supergirl rather than Supergirl turning into, like, the supporting character on her own show. So I'm interested, mildly concerned, but willing to give the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I think my first instinct was, ooh, because I got a lot of fatigue on Arrow when all the characters started suiting up and literally, like, no one was not suited up except Felicity. So I started that was my first, like, ugh. But then I started thinking about it and I thought, you know what? That actually makes sense. Like, he's really the only character in the main group that doesn't have anything to do right now. Like, Wynn is at the DEO and Kara is going to become a reporter, and, you know, Hank is John, and Alex works at the DEO, and Kat has her own stuff. So he's really the only character who has nothing, like, story-wise going on for him. And he very much has, his arc has been about setting, you know, spreading his wings. Like, he left Metropolis to spread his wings and become his own journalist, basically, and also, you know, be there for Kara. But, you know, he's looking to become his own person outside of being friends with Superman. So I feel like, you know, being close to two superheroes, one who is looking to expand their horizons, would naturally, like, look to help out, and taking to the streets probably makes sense. So I feel like logically I can see how he would come to that conclusion. So I'm more interested in it than I was at first. You know, it's when I first heard about it, didn't love it. Now I think it makes a lot of sense. So I'll be interested to see how it goes. And I'm interested in seeing the conflict that it's going to cause with Kara.
Yeah, that conflict is something I'm quite interested in as well, especially because between the two of them, it's there's always been a slight imbalance in that Kara has always been the one pursuing James and almost putting him on that pedestal to a point. So there's always been, like, a slight emotional imbalance in it. But it'll be interesting to see them butt heads rather than be completely okay with each other. I think a little bit of friction between them will be interesting because it may also help to ground their relationship slightly as well, so it's not on this pedestal of what they're expecting. You know, they're human with flaws and they have their own things to overcome with each other. So that'll be quite interesting, I think.
Yes, and we'll get to the other developments in their relationship in the episode, because we both have thoughts. So our last bit of Supergirl news is just ratings. So the Supergirl premiere scored a 1.1 out of 3 in the adult 18 to 49 demo, which is what networks are most interested in, and it had 3.02 million total viewers. So that put it at actually the top rated show on the CW for the week, because last week The Flash only scored a 1.1, but with 2.8 million viewers. So I feel like, you know, it's a good sign. You know, it didn't do terribly at all. That's a good number for the CW. We have to remember that the CW is the little sister of all the other networks, so it doesn't do the kind of numbers that CBS would do. My thought is that next week is going to be the big test to see what kind of drop it has. And just keeping in mind that ratings are completely dropping, and even The Flash is close to a series low, and The Flash has been the highest rated show on the network as well. So I don't think lower numbers, like Arrow is doing a 0.7 right now, and it's not in any danger.
Yeah.
So,
but that's still just quite low for Arrow,
yeah,
as well. Damn.
So ratings are down across the board, but but Supergirl did pretty well. We'll just say that.
Yeah. The other thing is that it's always going to be in comparison to other shows on the network. That's how they want to perform. They want shows that are continually performing better than their other shows on their own network, really. So it's going to be comparative to ratings that they usually get. So it's solidly safe. Like, there's no danger right now. Honestly, I think as word of mouth has gotten around about Supergirl and Superman and how they interacted, I wouldn't be entirely shocked if there's a slight uptick for the second episode, because the word of mouth has just been incredible. Like, I've not come across many negative opinions about the premiere, like, at all. Which, considering the flack that Supergirl got last season in some of the reviews, like, that's pretty damn good. It's like pretty impressive. So,
but season premieres tend to be the highest rated episode of the season. So I'm expecting there to be a little downtick, but it'll just be a question of how much of a downtick we see. But that being said, just it looks safe for now, but we'll be interested to see what it does next week.
Yeah. That's pretty much it for DC news. It's all Marvel now. So, this past week, I got the chance to go to New York Comic Con. I managed to sit in and catch the Iron Fist panel, where they released the first trailer. So we've had our first look at Iron Fist, and also a premiere date. So it is coming to Netflix on March 17th, 2017. So not that far away now. Got quite a lot of information just about Iron Fist in general. If you have seen Luke Cage, there was something that suggested that she might be making the jump to Iron Fist. That was confirmed at the panel. Rosario Dawson will be reprising her role as Claire Temple in Iron Fist. We got to see Jessica Henwick's Colleen Wing in action quite a bit, and Jeff Loeb has said that we'll be seeing a lot of her. Yeah, we just got a lot of clips in general of Iron Fist as well, which looks fairly impressive. I was mostly impressed by the clip of Colleen Wing, personally. There's going to be a lot of personal drama, I think, between Danny and his father's former business partner, who has now taken over Danny's company. So, yeah, the trailer itself, I didn't dislike it. There were some flashes of things that looked interesting. I think I caught a glimpse of Danny and Colleen getting close. Yes, in that way, which I wasn't really expecting. So that was quite interesting. The other news that sort of came out of that same panel is that Karen Page is going to be part of the Punisher solo series, so the spin-off. And Sigourney Weaver is going to be playing the villain in Defenders.
Love it.
Yeah, that was pretty damn cool. Like, the way they introduced it is that they needed to have someone incredibly imposing and a huge presence in order to justify, like, bringing all of these characters together to oppose that person. And then when they said, and she is a force indeed, and then they introduced Sigourney Weaver, I was like, this is gonna be incredible. She's gonna be so great. Like, whatever they give to her, they didn't give any suggestion about who she could be playing. I'm there for it. But did you check out the trailer and stuff for Iron Fist?
I did. I'm pretty neutral. I honestly am not all that excited. I mean, obviously I'll watch it, but it isn't doing all that much for me right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much in the same place. I got to talk to some of the cast and crew at the roundtables, where, and I haven't had a chance to transcribe everything and write it up yet, but Jeff Loeb had said that, in response to a question I asked about, like, the social issues that are always at the heart of these shows, you know, like, what is gonna be, do you think, the one that's at the core of Iron Fist? Obviously I was angling for, like, a justification almost of sticking so closely to the source material and not really updating it to fit 2016. I was looking for them to, like, confirm that it might be about white privilege, which, you know, Danny's world is so much about that. Didn't really say it in so many words. He did say that it was going to be tackling the 1% of the 1%. Which, I don't know if that was his way of saying rich white man privilege without actually saying it, but I guess it'll remain to be seen. Because as much as the Meachums, who are going to be the people that within the business world that Danny's going to be opposing, who are his almost former family, they were very close before you went missing. As much as they have privilege and have led a privileged life, Danny is equally as privileged. Like, even though he's gone through more hardships in respect to, like, where he ended up, he still has the privilege of, like, having been bestowed with these incredible powers and being able to come home and literally being able to walk straight back into a company that his family has owned. He has significant finances at his disposal. And so, even though he's an outsider almost to both worlds, he also has privilege in both. So it's a really odd place to, like, position your character, and can open it up to some incredible commentary if they decide to go that way. I don't know that they will. I hope that they will. It's a privilege that I have, being who I am, that I can still hold on to that hope. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't entirely dislike what I saw. And speaking to Finn Jones, he's got such a great demeanor when he's speaking, especially about Danny as a character, that it endeared me to him a little bit. So there's definitely a mild bias on my point, because he was so great to talk to. He was just such a nice person. Like, when he was talking about the character, you could tell that he'd really connected with the role and he'd had a lot of fun playing it, and that he really did genuinely care about what he'd got to do. Like, he'd literally come to the round tables from wrapping up filming that morning. So they'd wrapped at 10 a.m. and this round table was at 3. So he'd only managed to have a very small amount of sleep between that point, and he'd come straight to talk to people, which, incredible. Like, I, as someone who's been suffering from jet lag this past week, like, more power to him, because I don't think I would have been able to do it. But, so I'm very conflicted. I feel like, Iron Fist kind of has more potential in what story it can tell than Doctor Strange does. So, yeah, I'm conflicted. I still feel like I want to wait and see what they get to do, but I'm kind of also like, everything that I've seen so far is kind of keeping me on the fence a little bit, so
I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, because the other Marvel Netflix series have been so good, so yeah, they know what they're doing, but at the same time, just what we've seen is just not all that interesting for me.
Yeah, it's just, it's complicated, I think, more so than some of the others, but, yeah, that's kind of it for Iron Fist. The other little bit of Marvel news that we got is that, Hayley Atwell has kind of made her return as Peggy Carter, maybe not in the way that some people might have hoped. It's, voice only. But, yeah, she got a chance to reprise her role on Avengers Assemble, which is the animated show, that they do. So, they're currently doing, Secret Wars. So it's gonna have a Peggy Carter episode, that she's going to be involved in. And it's gonna be all about, some weird time bending powers and Howard Stark's gonna be in it, and he's gonna join forces with Peggy and Captain America and Iron Man as they battle Kang the Conqueror. So it's gonna be interesting. Not the Agent Carter lives that we've probably been hoping for, but yeah, will you tune in to just see Peggy, do you think?
I haven't been watching Avengers Assemble, so I don't really feel like I can.
Yeah, I mean, there is, like, an overarching sort of storyline with Avengers Assemble, but it's kind of one of those shows that you can kind of dip in and out. A lot of the episodes are fairly self-contained, so if you did want to just jump into, like, the Peggy Carter episode, you probably could, and not really be too confused. But I'm probably am. I kind of dip in and out of Avengers Assemble. I actually preferred the series that Avengers Assemble replaced, which was called Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
I heard that was terrible.
Earth's Mightiest Heroes?
Yeah, I think that's the one I was thinking of.
No.
I know there was an Avengers series that was really bad.
No, Earth's Mightiest Heroes was actually pretty good. Like, it had some really great content. Avengers Assemble is very hit and miss. Very hit and miss. So sometimes it'll be great, but sometimes it is really bad. So, and the first season of Avengers Assemble was, like, nowhere near as good as Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and people got mad about it. So, yeah.
I don't know. At least Peggy isn't being forgotten about.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, that's kind of it for news.
All right, so we have a lot of TV to talk about. Where would we like to start?
Anywhere is good. Let's just jump in wherever.
All right, should we start with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Sure.
We have more episodes to talk about because it premiered earlier. And I will just say that if you were following me on Twitter, you saw that I hadn't watched the last three episodes until, like, the day of the season four premiere.
But kudos to you for, like, being able to, like, knock out that many episodes in a day.
So, I guess we can start by talking just briefly about how the last season ended. That was a thing that happened.
I don't know how I feel about S.H.I.E.L.D. at the moment. I'm having a really tough time with it, which is almost a, like, role reversal of where we were when we were last recording, where I still had a fair amount of optimism about S.H.I.E.L.D. and you were probably the most pessimistic about it. I'm having a tough time with it, so I guess it's been a while since I watched the season finale. Like, it's been months. Like, actually months. But the whole fatigue that I got over the Pass the Necklace crap that they had going on, like, it gave me weird anxiety as it was, like, going between people, but not like in the fun way. It was mostly like, is this over yet? Like, I just kind of, I'm ready for it to be done. But I guess the whole thing leading up to Lincoln's death and him being the one in the shuttle and them kind of going back and forth on everything, I was just, by the time it got to the end, I was just exhausted. So, to be honest, like, trying to think back to, like, everything that happened is really difficult. I'm, like, there going, oh my god, what actually happened in the season finale? Whereas, like, the other ones, I'm a lot more clear on it. I remember that it was, like, I remember the necklace going between everyone. I remember, like, Lash being taken out unceremoniously, just, like, and remembering being, like, really, that's it? That's how that ends? And I remember Lincoln basically being self-sacrificing and kind of being like, no, I'm gonna go up and die and stuff. But other than that, it's very, very vague, fuzzy memory of everything that happened. Having finished it a little sooner than me, do you remember any of the, like, big details that I should be remembering? Other than frustration?
I mean, that pretty well covered it. I watched three episodes in a day, so it kind of all blended together. But I mostly left it feeling like, God, Coulson is still alive. That was my... obviously he's going to be, but it was my biggest disappointment because I just left that season hating him, hating everything about him. I cannot stand him anymore.
I'm finding it very difficult to feel overly invested in any of the characters. I guess the other big thing is, like, Fitz and Simmons are really giving it a go. What else? Ward slash Hive is dead
now. Yes, he was on the shuttle with Lincoln.
Yeah, so that's done. That's over. We're probably not going to see him again. I put in that caveat of probably, because there's always that very slight chance that they'll figure out a way to bring him back.
I feel like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has the thing with Brett Dalton that Arrow has with John Barrowman. Like,
yeah.
They like the actor so much that they make the character stick around far too long.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with that. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of really weirdly not into S.H.I.E.L.D. at the moment. In fact, going into, like, the premiere and these last couple of episodes, because I had a lot to catch up on in the last week, because I was away when all of the premieres pretty much happened. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was the one that I had to psych myself up for the most. Like, I had to really push myself to watch them. And that hasn't ever really happened to me before, so it was a really odd feeling. And I think, I don't know, I just got fatigue. And I wasn't really excited about the Ghost Rider stuff. Not to say in execution that Ghost Rider hasn't been great, because I think interest-wise, he's probably the most interesting thing that has happened in the three episodes so far. Sorry, but it's kind of it. But it's also fairly telling that their entire promotional campaign has been hyping up Ghost Rider, but hasn't really been touching on any of the characters that we should feel invested in. So, I don't know. I'm just, how have you felt about Ghost Rider so far? Because I kind of like him. I think he's pretty neat. I'm not too enthused about the effect. It's better than the movie that we did. But
yeah, I was cringing a bit.
Yeah.
I thought Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would have a bigger budget than The Flash does, but maybe not. I feel like he feels like a weird fit for me. This whole season feels weird because it feels like with all like the ghost stuff and Ghost Rider making a deal with the devil, like, why do I feel like I'm suddenly watching Supernatural instead of like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? It feels like there's been a shift, and I'm not sure how well it fits with what we've seen before. So I'm trying to hold out to see where they go, like see what their scientific mumbo jumbo explanation is. But it just like, because like the Inhumans come from the alien, like from aliens. So like we can kind of go with the sci-fi thing, but making a deal with the devil feels more fantasy. So it just, like, it doesn't quite feel like it fits for me with the tone that they've been going. The Arrowverse is more fantasy, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been more sci-fi. So it feels like they took a shift into the fantasy, and it doesn't quite feel like it fits for me.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. They're kind of, like, crossing their genre, their narrative structure, which sometimes can work if you're trying to shift things and change it up a little bit. But I'm not entirely sure that the change in tone is working for me. You know, I don't dislike the idea of mixing up fantasy and sci-fi elements. I mean, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, which is basically a fantasy set in space. It's not hard sci-fi the way that Star Trek is, or Firefly is, or Battlestar Galactica is. It has more fantasy elements to it. It just so happens to be set in space. So I don't necessarily dislike the idea of, like, mixing up your genres. I just don't think that the shift in tone has really worked for me. I just don't know. I don't know if it's, like, coming across. I'm just, like, I feel really kind of tired. The other thing, obviously, that's happened is Daisy is kind of on her own. She's kind of still, like, beating herself up over, like, Lincoln's death, and she's not dealing with that particularly well, but I'm not particularly enjoying her isolation from the rest of the characters. The change in dynamic there also isn't particularly working for me. I think she's always worked incredibly well when she has those relationships to play off, like the one that she has with May, the one that she has with Coulson. As frustrated as I may get with Coulson, I still think that relationship is really interesting. So, I don't know. I understand why the dynamics have had to change, because that was the only direction they could really go in the corner that they wrote themselves into at the end of season three. But at the same time, it's changed it so much that I almost don't recognize the show anymore, or the characters to a certain extent.
Yeah, I agree. It feels odd. It's just everything has shifted, and it's shifted in a way that just doesn't make it all that much fun to watch, honestly. So I am feeling the same fatigue that you are, just because I'm not finding the things that I've really enjoyed about the show in the past in the current season.
Yeah, and without that, it's like I'm having to, like, trick myself into watching almost, which is not a great sign. Like, I'm having to be like, oh, if you watch an episode of this show, you can watch the next episode after that only after you've watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, I did that with, I was talking to you, actually. I was watching Luke Cage, and I basically said, okay, you can watch another episode of Luke Cage, but you don't get to watch the episode after that until you've watched episode 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Once you eat your Brussels sprouts, then you can have your ice cream.
Yeah, basically.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the Brussels sprouts of superhero TV right now.
I think we found our episode title. But it's not entirely inaccurate. I'm hoping it picks up a little bit, that they find their feet with this new tone and it settles in, or they find a familiar thread that they can just pull on to get me back into that sort of feeling that this is still the show that I liked. I did still like S.H.I.E.L.D. It did a lot of stuff that frustrated me, but and it does have a lot of elements that I enjoy. You know, it's one of the most diverse teams that they've got on superhero TV in respect to male-to-female ratio, but also people of color to white people in ratio. I feel like it's doing quite a lot in that respect to being able to show a diverse amount of, like, a diverse number of people with and without powers and in positions of power and out of power, and also good and evil. Like, they have a really great mix-up. It's just sometimes the execution of their writing and their plots and other things, they fall into tropes that are tired. And so I kind of want it to find its footing again to get me back into a place where I'm, like, really enjoying it. I'm rooting for it still. Like, I still really want it to succeed. I'm just struggling right now. But I guess blitzing through some other stuff super quickly, fallout from Civil War, the Inhumans are being registered under the Sokovia Accords, which that debate is up to which side you fell on in Civil War, whether you agreed with the Sokovia Accords or not. But yeah, it's kind of putting them in danger as well. So as we know, like, superhero registration isn't always the best thing. It kind of creates a database that people can target.
And in the last episode, they were being targeted.
Yeah. So, it's a nice idea in theory, but in practice. The new S.H.I.E.L.D. director, because, yes, Coulson is no longer director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
is also a bland white guy.
Yeah. Also a bland white guy who is also an Inhuman, and S.H.I.E.L.D. is public again. Which I feel like is gonna end about as well as it did the first time round. So, that's another thing that happened. I don't necessarily feel like that person was the right choice. Mac was such a great director of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, I'm a little disappointed that we're maybe not exploring that option some more. But hey, I'm not writing for the show, so whatever. And then there's that whole May thing with the ghosts that have made her go crazy that I'm not entirely sure what the hell is going on with that, but that's also a thing that's happening.
Yeah, I feel like they're gonna give us some science-y mumbo-jumbo explanation of what happened to those people, because Robbie says they're connected to him somehow, but yeah. I have no idea, and it's weird, and I think I tweeted, like, why do I feel like we need to call the Winchesters when we first saw them?
The show is not on the CW. We're not going to have a Supernatural crossover.
I know. So it's just, it's weird. Oh, and there's also the, like, weird robot android AI thing that's super creepy that made me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I really don't know what's going on with S.H.I.E.L.D. right now. I'm not entirely into it. But that's basically the rundown of what the hell is going on.
And our lack of enthusiasm.
Yeah. I just really want it to get back on track for me. But yeah, like I said, struggling a little bit. Everything else, though, has been pretty strong for me. I think S.H.I.E.L.D.'s the one I'm struggling with the most, with Arrow coming up quite close behind, but
I will not be shocked if this is S.H.I.E.L.D.'s last season.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, I mean, they moved it to a death slot, and its ratings weren't super great, and it got a fourth season because of syndication purposes. So, like,
yeah.
I don't know, it feels like it could be in its final legs for me.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked.
I wouldn't be surprised, basically.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if this is it for S.H.I.E.L.D. Do you think that, obviously going mildly off topic, do you think they'd replace it with something?
I don't know. Like, it's not. I think part of the problem with putting it in the movie universe is that it's just not connected in any way. And that's sort of not, like, you want more. They're like, oh, we're pulling in the Sokovia Accords, but then the movies are never affected by the TV show, like, for logistical reasons. But it doesn't quite feel like it works all that well when you try and connect the movie universe to the TV, and they have nothing, they really don't have anything to do with each other. So I'm not sure if they would try again. I mean, they already canceled one of their shows, and the one that I liked better.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yes. I don't know that they'd be able to replace it. And Marvel clearly has investment in other places now. Like, we've got that Runaways show coming, and we've got Cloak and Dagger coming as well. So,
and Netflix, obviously.
Netflix, and they're teaming up with FX with Legion as well. So they've kind of got other projects on the go. It feels like right now Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is almost the afterthought.
Yeah, I do not disagree with that. I mean, it might keep going, but I just would not be shocked if this is kind of it for it. But we'll see.
And the season finale will be a series finale. I wonder how they'd be able to wrap everything up, but I guess, yeah, as we're going through season four, we might get like a gut feeling of how it's gonna go, how it's gonna wrap up, I guess.
Ooh. We shall see, but I guess we can move on to the massive amount of DC that is on TV.
Yes.
So, where do we want to start? Shall we just start with Supergirl?
Yes. I've been dying to talk about Supergirl. Oh my
God. And I watched all of these as a screener, so I was teasing Danya like a week before it aired with it.
The actual worst.
Well, you saw Civil War before I did, so. So, this, we're just gonna bring back our favorite word. It's delightful. This was just straight up delightful. So we did get to talk about the Supergirl season finale before we took our unanticipated break. So we saw that at the end there was a pod that crashed, and at the beginning of the season premiere, we see it open, and there is a man in it. We know that it will be Mon-El, but they have brought him to the DEO, and they got some new digs. They got a new network, and they got some new digs that have windows and everything, which was a funny scene where Kara's like, you were making me fly to that cave, and this one was so much closer, which was kind of great. But so new digs, they brought their mystery guest in, and they can't really figure anything out about him, and he has stayed unconscious for the entire episode, so we don't really know anything about him other than he's got really tough skin like a Kryptonian would. So mystery there is being set up. I don't know that we have much else to say because we don't really know anything yet. But I know Danya is dying to talk about Tyler Hoechlin as Superman, so I'll just let her go.
I really am. I was probably in the camp of actually being fairly excited about Hoechlin pretty much from the get-go when he got cast in the role, because I know that he has the ability to be able to play a role like this. So I got super excited about it, and Hoechlin just in general, outside of shows, is like a delight, basically. He is almost completely the embodiment of who Superman is. So it felt like a really natural fit to me. Obviously, I had like some of the similar concerns that a lot of people had, which it was like, you know, Superman is so established as a character that, you know, will it take away from Kara? Oh my God, no, it doesn't. Like, they just worked so well together. It was so comfortable. It was like they had known each other for their entire lives. It was so nice. It just worked. From the get-go, the balance of power was almost entirely in Kara's court, where she was like, I changed his diapers. sort of thing. But he just worked so well. He, as much as I dislike the Superman films and how Superman is in the movies, I don't think Henry Cavill was the wrong choice for Superman. I think that had he been given the right material, he would have been a much better Superman. But this is the Superman I've been dying to see. Like, competent, comfortable in his skin. You know, the lengths that they went to stop a building from collapsing. Like, that's my Superman. That's him in a nutshell. And it was just so great to see, like, even the difference between Clark and Superman. It just worked. Everything about it worked for me, and I'm so, so happy. And honestly, he didn't take away anything from this still being Supergirl story. He just felt like there is a natural sort of supporting character. So I wouldn't really even hate if they brought him back later in the season, to be honest.
Yes, I was in the camp that was not convinced when he was first cast. Like, he just did not have a look that I expected, and I could not stand Derek on Teen Wolf, so that didn't help. But I was convinced as soon as I watched the episode. I just found him so charming and earnest, and just like, and the writers, it's very clear that they understand this character. Like, they get what makes Superman Superman, and within like the first 30 seconds of him being like, I'll get my article to you lickety split, no, I know that most people don't say lickety split today, like, it was like, you get him, you understand this character. So I found him ridiculously charming, but never overshadowing Kara. Kara is the one who, she got to the shuttle first, so she did the brunt of the work from the front of it, pushing it to keep it from crashing. She was also the one to rebuild the tower while he held on to it. So, you know, he never overshadows her, and he never is interested in overshadowing her. He's just like, oh yeah, I'll just help however I can. I'm just here to hang out. And I liked the moment. It was really sweet when he says he wants to stick around to hear more stories about his parents, which is really sweet. And I don't know, I found him really wonderful, both the writing and the portrayal. And also interesting, we saw a little bit of him and Jean, and we found out they are not on good terms because Jean found kryptonite and Clark wanted to destroy it, and Jean has kept it. And Clark isn't necessarily worried about Jean having it, but about, like, if someone else takes over the DEO, or if he gets a direct order from the president, like, what are you going to do with it? So until that kryptonite is destroyed, Clark has no interest in helping them out, and I feel like that may be something that we see come back.
Don't think it's entire, like, it's not, the justification there is, like, solid. Like, I'm completely there with him, because, you know, it's that one thing that can, you know, really seriously harm and potentially kill him, but not just him, Kara as well. And so I don't think he's entirely in the wrong with being like, you've literally got and are housing and are trying to justify having a weapon that can kill me and also my cousin. And, you know, you think it's okay. So, and I mean, we know Lex is in this universe. We know that he's come to blows with Lex, and Lex is in prison currently, but Lex is such a huge force working against him that if somehow he managed to infiltrate and manipulate his way to getting to kryptonite, then that would be a big problem with capital B, capital P.
As we saw in this episode, Lex, even in prison, has enough reach to put out a hit on his sister.
Yeah. Which, you know, oh, dude is formidable.
Do you think we're ever going to see Lex on the show?
I really want to see Lex. I feel it would be a really interesting way to go, because Lex is such a huge part of the super lore in respect to Superman, that I would really like to see him come to blows with Kara. Like, I would like to see how Kara would handle Lex Luthor. Because we all know how Superman has dealt with Lex Luthor before, and we've seen that so many times, but it would be interesting to see, like, the differences in how they tackle coming up against Lex. Or even how they'd tackle him together. That would be quite interesting. And he would be, like, a force that I would expect them to, like, go up against together as well.
It would be interesting. I just wonder how much of the big Superman villains or anything they want to bring in. But they're bringing in Metallo next episode. Yeah. So we're bringing in another biggie. So, yeah, it's exciting.
It is super exciting.
So what else? So Wynn has left Catco apparently and took a job at the DEO. So
I think it's a better fit for him. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think him working at the DEO, much the same way as giving James the opportunity to suit up as a vigilante, as Guardian, Wynn being able to use his skills at the DEO is far more useful and a lot more interesting for his character than him being a random IT guy at Catco. Like, he just felt like a footnote. So being able to give him something more active to do and putting him in a position that is a lot more dynamic, I think is only going to be a credit to the character. So I like that change. I think that's a really good change for Wynn.
I agree. I like it. I think it makes sense. And with Kara changing locations in Catco as well, like, we're not really going to see him in their, like, secret lair on the top floor or whatever. So yeah. I think it makes sense to put him and his skills to use at the DEO. So I like it. He's probably not going to get as good of benefits with the DEO, but he's definitely going to get a lot less abuse. So
yes, there's very that. True. As,
Lena Luthor. We met Lex's sister, and they put the suspicion on her for a while, but she turns out to be the victim of a hit, but she ends up not being a victim at all because she's the one to shoot the assassin, which was kind of awesome. Yeah, I thought she was great.
Really interesting parallel to Kara's story as well.
Yes.
That they're both under the shadows of a family member that is so much more famous or infamous in certain respects. And it's really interesting that if we continue to see a lot more of her, how that's going to run parallel to how we saw Kara trying to figure out how to operate outside of Superman's shadow in season one. Like, I think that's going to be really, really cool. It would also be fairly interesting to see if they get a rapport and a relationship based on that common ground. I think it would be cool because Katie McGrath is like a Irish queen of my heart. Like, I love her so much. Like, I adore her from my Merlin days. Like, I love her. I love that she's got another big role that's gonna just throw her out there some more, and I just want to see more and more and more of her. So I think it would be great if they utilize her a lot. Especially because, like, in respect to the narrative, like, what they've got there is something that could be incredibly interesting. So, one more. Give me more.
Yes, I enjoyed her quite a bit. And they've set her up to be, you know, basically a good guy, but she will always have the potential, because she's a Luther, though she's an adopted Luther, to turn, because we've seen, you know, the importance of family. So what if Lex comes calling at some point and makes an offer she can't refuse or something or whatever? Yeah. So I feel like she's going to be kind of on a tightrope, which is interesting. So I liked her quite a bit. Kara had to make her decision about the new job she wants, and she decided she wants to be a reporter. And there's this great scene where she tells Kat, and Kat pulls out her resume, and it had reporter written on it, because she knew from the moment she interviewed Kara that she would be a good reporter. And I kind of love this. Like, my first thought was, oh, they're going to make her copy Clark. But then it's like, but when you think about what a good reporter is, it's basically everything that Kara is and aspires to. So I kind of love this for her.
Same. Yeah, I'm really interested. And the thing is that she's not going to be a reporter the same way Clark is going to be a reporter. Like, it was very evident from the way that we saw them interacting in this episode that they both have different approaches to things. Like, they're aiming for the same result, but their personalities lend them to interacting with people in different ways. So she'll be a reporter, but she'll be a reporter in her own right, because she doesn't work exactly the same way that Clark does. same thing. She's never going to work exactly the same way that Superman does. That's not to say one of them is right in their approach over the other. I just think it's nice that she has her own career goal and she's aiming for it. And it's something she feels really passionate about. So I like it. I like this direction for her. I'm just the whole premiere was just solid. Like a really solid, really great premiere that set up the tone for the entire series so well.
Yeah, so Cat Grant obviously is not going to be around all that much because Calista Flockhart did not want to move to Vancouver. So she's going to be recurring. They were saying she'll come up to Vancouver for chunks of time and film multiple episodes at a time and then be gone. So we don't really know how often we're going to see her, just that we will. But they were setting up in this episode that she, it looks like she might be being set up to take some time off, because I got the impression she might be wanting to spend more time with her sons, but I'm not entirely sure. What were you getting?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It was very vague what was going on. There was very obviously something up. And she was clearly putting things into motion that would allow for her to step away almost. But yeah, I don't know exactly what it's going to be. It would be nice to see her taking some time away to spend with her sons, but also, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they move forward with that.
Yeah, I guess before we go into the James and Kara bit, I just had a couple things. Where's Lucy? Because she, at the end of last season, she was supposed to be co-running the DEO with Jean. And we didn't get any mention of Maxwell Lord.
No, we didn't. Oh.
So just a couple of lingering questions. Like, if Jenna Tatum didn't want to move to Vancouver either, I would understand. But I would have expected, like, a mention that she's, like, at the other bunker or something.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. I guess it'll work itself out. It'll work itself out as the episodes continue, I think. I mean, they won't just, like, pretend that those characters don't exist, right?
I hope so. And I adore Maxwell Lord, so I'm hoping the lack of mention wasn't a sign of things to come, because he was sporadic through season one. I didn't remember hearing anything about Peter Facinelli and his status over the summer.
Oof. It's so nerve-wracking.
I know. I just don't want to lose that character because he's really great too. But so those are a couple lingering questions. But then there are James and Kara. So they start the episode, they're going to go on a date, it gets interrupted, and Kara ends up basically breaking things off and saying that they're better off friends. And Andrew Kreisberg said that basically they broke them up because they felt like during season one, I'll quote him, he says, "We felt like we were pursuing that relationship more because we felt like we had to than any of us was really truly feeling it. It was interesting because we brought in some new writers in the middle of the season to keep some fresh blood, and even they were like coming at it fresh and sort of feeling like we weren't quite sure how we were going to make this happen. We realized that the best scenes between them were just the nice sweet scenes where they were just being friends." So he said, the theme of last year was how does Kara become Supergirl? And the theme of this year is how does Supergirl become Kara? It felt like there was a way to have that realization actually be part of the story. Most of us have had friendships that have turned into something more than you realize maybe it wasn't. So it felt like a very natural, very real story that we could be telling. So basically, I think that's BS. because I think they had a really great dynamic, and I can get behind Kara deciding she doesn't want to deal with a romantic relationship while she's trying to figure herself out. but I think trying to tell us, the viewers, that it's not a natural or organic development for them to be romantically entangled is disingenuous.
I also really don't like what it's opened up, like on certain news sites talking about, like, did you see the article that was being like, James just cares about like Kryptonians and he's like Kryptonian sexual or something like that, and like,
what?
Did you not see this? It was such bullshit. Oh my god. It was terrible. It was basically saying how he fetishizes them and that's all he cares about, and if it's not Clark then it has to be Kara, and that's like, and I was just like looking at it and going, look, just be real, just say you didn't want to see this black guy with a white girl, like, just if you're gonna like make up crap like that, at least be honest about your racism instead of trying to hide it behind something. And some of the conversations that have come up based on it have not been great. I feel like this whole relationship is something that could have worked in the writing. I don't understand how they couldn't find a way to make it work, because the chemistry was there between the characters. For me, like, I think the two of them worked really well with each other and the dynamic was really great, so I don't think it's an issue there, just an issue that for some reason they couldn't figure it out in the writing, which I'm not sure why.
I'm gonna hold out hope, maybe it's vain, that they will come back to it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like these couples that are like meant to be or whatever do not get together and just stay together in these shows.
Which I wish they would sometimes.
Yeah. But if I hadn't read Andrew Kreisberg talking about it, that would have been my first instinct, was just, oh, they don't want them just to get together immediately.
They do, like Ross and Rachel with them.
Yeah, like that's what they do in these shows. Like, these characters don't get together and stay together, basically. Like, that was my expectation. You know, I don't blame Kara for not wanting, like, she's got a lot of changes in her life and potentially losing that friendship with James, because just the dynamic is going to change. Like, I can see how that would be scary when she needs stability in some aspect of her life, and maybe when she's starting to feel more comfortable in both of her roles she can come back to it. So I'm going to hold out hope that they'll realize that they do work together in that way and that they'll come back to it, but I don't buy what they were selling in terms of like, oh, they're just better as friends. Like, I don't see that.
Yeah. I guess we'll see how it plays out, but who knows?
Yeah. And I did see a lot of like discussions of it being potentially racist, but these are the same people who made Iris Black. And
yeah, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I will clarify with what I said. I don't think it is from like a show perspective. I absolutely think this has given people an excuse and an outlet in order to be slightly racist about it, but trying to hide behind like weird.
But I saw people on Tumblr calling the writers racist. And I don't think that's the case. I'm like, you do realize that on The Flash, you've got a black woman and a white guy getting together. Yeah. Like, they kissed in the last episode. Like, they're going to be a couple.
It's not like they killed him off either.
Yeah.
To, like, stop it. They just broke up. Like, and you know what? Whatever I feel about it, sometimes that happens, you know? Breakups happen, but do I agree with it entirely? No, not really, but am I willing to see how it'll play out? Yes, absolutely. Can I justify people calling it racism? No, because they're giving James a hugely active role in respect to making him a vigilante, so it's not like they're doing it in order to sideline him as a character and, like, untangle him from Kara's entire storyline. They're basically just changing up the narrative. So I don't think that that argument holds a lot of water.
And these writers across their shows have really struggled to write romance. I feel like on every show that they write, the romance is the weakest thing that they write. So maybe they just wanted to get away from it. And I don't blame them because that is their, it is not their strong suit.
No, it's really not. They're so bad at writing relationships. So bad.
It's not good across the series, like across any of the Arrowverse shows. So, yeah. You know, if they want to step away from it for now,
yeah.
I'm willing to see where it goes.
Yeah.
And if we come back at the end of the season and they're still better off friends and whatever, then we'll have another talk about it. But, you know.
Yes.
But, yeah, I don't love it, but I'm withholding judgment because everything else has, I think, been pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
So, Supergirl, on the whole, delightful. Yes. Our favorite word.
Definitely delightful.
So, The Flash, we have two episodes of The Flash to talk about. We did not get to talk about the season two finale, which saw Barry dealing with Zoom killing his father in front of him, and then Zoom wanting to race because this is The Flash and that's what they do. And then Barry does the whole time remnant thing that he learned from Zoom in the first place, which was kind of awesome. And Zoom, in this really horrifying scene, gets killed by time wraiths. Like, that was really horrifying.
It was really, like, harrowing. I was just like, oh, this is super dark for The Flash. Like,
yeah, like, the way he, like, wilted, almost, like, decayed, just, I was really disturbed.
Mm.
And then at the end, Barry continues being a selfish dummy, and he decides to go back in time and save his mother. So, we talked about it, about the season one finale. I did not like it that he was willing to do it then. But at least he talked to the other people and they kind of gave him permission, like his loved ones, to do it. This time he just did it and yeah. Changed everybody's life because he was hurting. And this area of Barry is, his selfishness is probably his biggest flaw. As a character, it's been consistent, but it's driven me nuts. But I will give them credit that he is being hit over the head from multiple angles about how selfish he was being. So the show says, yes, this was selfish. Yes, it was bad. Barry, dumb, dumb, dumb. So I can go with it because basically everybody's telling him that this was stupid.
And it genuinely, genuinely has consequences this time because he can't fix it. That's like the final point of this that really drives it home for him, which probably should have landed a hell of a lot sooner, but hey, if it's finally landed, then okay, I can deal with it. But, you know, this time he can't reverse anything. Like, the changes that...
reversed.
I know. The changes that are in effect, he managed to reverse most of them eventually, but there are cracks, there are changes, there is another timeline again, and he can't go back and fix everything, because every time he does try to fix something, it kind of affects something else, and it just continually has a knock-on effect. So it's never going to be perfect. It's never going to go back to the way that it was. So there has to be a point where he just stops. And thankfully he has. I'm hoping we don't revisit him trying to change the past. So
I feel like the... message he got from the real Jay Garrick of finally stuck. Ugh. I think it took him realizing that his interference led to a world where Cisco's brother was dead.
Yeah.
I feel like that was what hammered it home for him.
I love that it was Jay Garrick as well that kind of was like, look, I've done what you're trying to do. Like, you're smarter than this. You're a smart person. That whole conversation in the diner was beautiful. Like, I loved that. It just...
And the Dawson's Creek on the TV.
I know. I laughed so hard at that. I was like, oh my god, where are they?
That was pretty amazing. Oh, yeah. And I like that we do seem to be, I'm guessing Jay Garrick will be popping in and out, which I like because give me all of the John Wesley Shipp.
Yeah, same. I think he worked incredibly well in this episode. And it just the way that he approached it in like, I'm sorry that I look like your father, but he very firmly was like, but I am also not your father. Like, I'm sorry about that, but, and I'm sorry that I look like him, but I'm...
And I know this must be hard for you.
Yeah. And he's like, but I'm not your father. I like that he kind of put a stop to that immediately to be like, you cannot get emotionally attached to me and project your emotions and grief onto me and use me as a coping mechanism, because no, that's not going to happen. Like, I thought that was really quite smart of him, and him being like, I understand this is difficult for you to look at me and see your father's face, but I am not that man, and you cannot make me that man.
That must have been hard for the actors, because they developed such a rapport as Henry and Barry, and then to play it so differently. That must have been a challenge.
Yeah, it worked incredibly well, though. Like, I think it was very successful.
Yeah, I like it, and I'm glad that it looks like that Jay will be in and out, which is great.
Yeah.
Also, development... So, I guess another thing is, were you expecting Flashpoint to be one episode?
No, I thought it might last, like, a few, like, a couple of episodes. The way that it did last one episode made sense, though, in respect to, like, the more Barry used his powers, the more the timeline sort of caught up with him, and they started merging properly, and he stopped, like, having knowledge of the previous timeline. He started forgetting relationships and people and how his powers as the Flash worked, and he started slowly losing that. I understand that they needed to resolve that, but I also feel like, to a certain extent, we are still kind of in a Flashpoint. A lot about the universe is still the same, but it's also not. We are in a third timeline. We're not back to the same world completely as the first two seasons have been set in. We're also not in that one timeline that was completely different. We're in a middle ground between the two. So I don't... Yes, Flashpoint, to the extent where everything's different, is not happening. But I don't think it's entirely over, because we are in a timeline that is subtly different. And for me, I think that's slightly more interesting to play with, because it was a lot easier to be like, oh, this will be over in a few episodes and it'll go back to the way that we've always known and da-da-da-da-da, when everything was different and... It was easy to pinpoint, like, what the differences were and how they could resolve it and how they could navigate around it. But because this one is so close to the previous timeline and it's very, very, very small differences, it's a lot harder to kind of disassociate them and sort of pinpoint, like, where things have changed, because it could be anything and it could be hidden in plain sight, as we see with Caitlin. So...
Yeah, and Diggle has a son. Baby Sarah has been written out of the universe. Yeah. I'm very distraught about that.
I know. Which, holy crap. Like, that's a pretty big thing. I wonder if they did that because they couldn't find, like, a child actor that was a girl to continue playing Sarah, and they were like, crap, what do we do?
I saw a friend of... theorized that by giving Diggle a son, they're getting closer to the Star City 2046 Ooh. Timeline. Because Connor Hawke was Diggle's son. And he was, you know, John Diggle. So.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Which I thought was interesting. I think it also makes logistical sense because The Flash premiered before all the other shows, so they got like the big timeline change out of the way before all the other shows came back, and then any slight subtle differences you see from then on, you can start accounting for Flashpoint, so it's all taken care of but can still affect the other shows. So I wasn't expecting it to be that fast, but the way they did it, it makes sense for how it can tie into the other shows as well.
Yeah, and there are some bigger differences, you know. There are some huge, like, variations in this timeline, like...
Did somebody say Draco Malfoy?
I know. I really, really like Julian Albert. A lot. He is basically Draco Malfoy, but... I like that pretty much everyone likes him, except for Barry, because he doesn't like Barry, because he doesn't trust him. And honestly, his gut instinct...
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong, exactly. And I think a character like Julian Albert in Barry's life is someone that he needs to consistently challenge him and basically call him out, because... A lot of his friends, yes, they will do it, but they also tiptoe around him a lot. And they give him the benefit of the doubt a lot. And they'll
even people who aren't totally his friends, like, you know, his co-workers, like Captain Singh would, you know, he gets a lot more leeway with his weirdness than he probably should.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I think a character like Julian is going to be great for Barry as well. Like, I think it's going to be interesting for the show to have a character that's calling Barry out. Because it's not something that he's had quite a lot of. Especially not in, like, his day-to-day life. So, I really did like him a lot. I also think it's just hilarious that everyone else is like, oh, Julian, yeah, we love that guy.
And the bear is like, I hate him. They're like, you always say that.
Yeah. I love that so much. I think he's a great addition to the show.
Yeah. I quite enjoy him. And then one of our big bads, because we found out we are going to have two big bads this season, is Dr. Alchemy, who is giving people who had... powers in Flashpoint, powers in the new timeline. And he says he is preparing the world. We don't know what for, but he is preparing the world. So, what is he preparing the world for, Danya?
I don't know. I'm like that going some universe ending event. I don't know.
And is he... So, my crackpot theory right now is just based on names, because in the comics, one of Dr. Alchemy's names is Albert Desmond, and Julian Albert. So, is Julian somehow connected to Dr. Alchemy?
Like a doppelganger? I mean, I don't want the Julian that we've been introduced to turn out to be Dr. Alchemy. I'm, like... 3,000 goddamn percent over that whole it's someone who's always been in your midst reveal. Like, I'm done. Like, it's recycled. They've recycled it kind of twice over season 1 and season 2. Uh-huh. You do not want them to do the same thing for season 3, because the easiest thing to be is like, oh, it's Julian Albert. Like, that's the cheap way out, to be like, It's him in some way. I could probably see it being a doppelganger who's, like, fallen through the cracks between, like, the timelines. I would accept that more than anything else. But I kind of want Julian Albert, as we've been introduced to him, to just be Julian Albert.
Yeah, Albert Desmond had two personalities. So he has a criminal personality and a good person personality. So that would be interesting if they played up the, like...
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde aspect.
And this is completely just based on the fact that his last name is the same as the character. And when they first announced the character, his last name was something different. So they changed it to Albert specifically.
I wonder if that's a red herring to, like...
It could be.
Throw us onto the scent and then just be like, lol, psych.
But they've completely played with character, like the Reverse Flash before, so... He was still Eobard Thawne, but he was also Harrison Wells, sort of. So, I don't know. I think it's interesting, but I'm guessing there will be some kind of connection to Julian in whatever's going on. Because I feel like the change of name to Albert was not incidental. All right. So, enjoying The Flash so far?
Yes. Good? Loving it. I think Supergirl was the one I enjoyed the most, and then Flash was, like, really close behind.
Same. All right. Arrow. We have two episodes of Arrow. We'll briefly touch on the season 4 finale. Thank God it's over. Because that season was terrible. Just everything was awful, and I'm so glad it's over. I don't really know what else to say other than it was awful. The only bright spot was that Neil McDonough was very good in that part, and now he gets to be on Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah. I'm hoping that he gets slightly better material on Legends, but it's not that I disliked Damian Dark. It just...
The writing for him was weak, but I thought... He was very good in the part. That's how I also felt about Matt Nable as Ra's al Ghul. They're very good in the part, but the writing for them wasn't always great.
Agreed.
But yeah, so we are past the barren wasteland that was season 4.
Yeah.
And I have shockingly not hated these first two episodes.
There have been moments that I've really, really, really enjoyed. Oddly, the flashbacks. I don't know. I don't recognize myself. I usually do not like the flashbacks at all, but I've, like, fairly enjoyed these
ones. I've been looking forward to the Russia flashbacks since we found out Oliver was a Bratva captain, so... Yeah. And Anatoly is just so delightful.
Yeah, I really like Anatoly a lot.
He's so funny! I love him! He's hilarious, but he's also, like, super dangerous, which is such a great dynamic. I love him.
Yeah. I really, really like him as well. I haven't been hating the flashbacks. I'm glad that this is probably our last set of flashbacks, like... The end, full stop, that's it. But I'm as the last set of them, I'm not hating. I'm really not hating them. So,
like, this is an actually, I feel like, an interesting story. Like, it felt like before they were just trying to fill in a year, whereas this one, like, actually has an endpoint and a specific thing they need to accomplish. Like, Oliver has to become a Bratva captain and then get back to the island.
Yeah. It makes me think, every time it's like Oliver has to go back to the island, I just think in my head of, like, Finn going, why does everyone want to go back to Jakku? Why is it always Jakku?
And I'm excited for Dolph Lundgren in the flashbacks.
Yeah.
Because when I was younger, Rocky IV was my favorite Rocky movie because I had terrible taste as a child.
Oh, Caitlin, I love you.
I mean, it's not anymore, but, you know, when you're 10, like, the really terrible ones are fun, so I kind of loved it. So I'm very excited to see... I assume he's playing the guy that Oliver is there to kill.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see. I'm excited for these flashbacks, which I haven't liked the flashbacks since season 2. So That's a weird feeling.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about it other than more Anatoly, please.
You know, I adore him. He's so funny. I love him. Okay, so Oliver, aka Mayor Handsome, is not a very good mayor, shocking nobody, because he's spending all his time being the Green Arrow and not doing anything as mayor. But in the second episode, he picked it up a little bit with the whole community health event. So there's that. Felicity, currently dating a detective, and is for some reason living in the loft. And I'm just going to say that that's a Flashpoint thing.
Yeah. It's got to be a Flashpoint thing, because that makes no sense otherwise.
Anything weird, I'm just going to say, is a Flashpoint thing. And her being in that loft is a Flashpoint thing.
Yeah.
So, and she and Oliver seem to have a be back to normal in their dynamic, which is good.
Yeah.
But makes me wonder how much they actually dealt with everything that went on between them. Probably not as much as they should have.
Yeah. I don't think that they have, but I also don't hate that the dynamic is kind of okay. Like, she's calling him out on stuff, but I also am kind of feeling okay with them having removed the romantic aspect a little bit. There's no expectation there. They just are. And I kind of don't dislike the detective that she's dating.
Okay, and I didn't even mention that Felicity was on The Flash.
Yes.
Barry went to go see her because that's the same thing. Because I call them platonic soulmates because they are basically two sides of the same coin, but they're not romantically involved. So they're platonic soulmates. So I love that he's just like, everything's too much. I need to talk to Felicity.
Yeah. And I also like that she was basically like, so go and fix it. And
yeah, exactly.
He's like, yeah, I should go and fix it. And she's like, now.
I love their friendship. And I was glad that he's just like, I need to go talk to Felicity. And he's like, I kissed Iris twice and I erased it. And she's like, yeah, I hate when that happens. Oh, I love their friendship so much. Yeah, so Felicity had a brief cameo in the Flash, which I adore because she and Barry are precious together. So also going on Arrow, Quentin. Oh, Quentin.
I know.
He, shocking probably nobody, it shouldn't, fell off the wagon after Laurel's death. And Sarah went off time traveling, so he's alone, and he broke up with Donna, so he is by himself. That was a hilarious scene when he's like, Oliver's like, where's Donna? He's like, in heaven. And he's like, what? And he's like, oh, that's the casino where she's waiting tables. That was great. But Quentin, breaking my heart. Think of how much he has. I don't like women dying to cause pain for men, but like, thinking about how much he has lost. He lost Sarah twice, and now he's lost Laurel. And he is divorced from his wife, and he's by himself now, and just heartbreaking. So he was supposed to work security at the community health event. He came late because he was drinking. So Thea, because Thea had her own addiction issues, in grief because she was on drugs after Oliver died, if we remember all the way back to season one. She realizes that he's hurting and needs something to stay sober before, so she offers him a position as deputy mayor, since, as we remember, he lost his badge in the last season, and he accepts, and it was a really lovely moment, and I think Thea is better than everybody.
Yeah. Thea should be mayor. Like, holy crap. Thea is...
Girl gets
down.
Yeah, she's great. She has retired from being a vigilante because she is not here for it. That's another thing. Oliver is killing again.
Yeah. I was like, wait, what? No, Oliver, no.
But I'm glad that Laurel's death has had such a major effect on him.
Yeah.
Because so it's not just being played for, you know, shock value and then they're moving past it. Like, it is having major ramifications. And, like, he has completely regressed to his season one tactics.
Basically. I am getting slightly annoyed already with, like, every time Oliver is called out on something, he's basically like, yeah, but Laurel.
True.
I'm like, okay, I get it, but please do not use Laurel as your shield. Like, that's not cool. Like, honor her legacy the way that you want to honor it. Don't keep using her as an excuse for your shitty behavior.
I think Oliver's problem is that he doesn't know how to talk about his problems.
Yeah.
So he is completely internalizing all of that grief, and so
he really needs to go into therapy.
They really need, like, a superhero therapist who, like, they can all talk to and, like, talk about being a superhero.
Yeah.
Too. Like, that would be a TV show I would watch.
Yeah. Them getting therapy and trying to deal emotionally with their messed up issues. Yeah. They need it. They desperately need it. And fast.
And also, that Black Canary statue was hideous.
Oh my god. I'm glad I wasn't the only one that thought that. I was like, oh, this.
It looks like a middle school art project. Like,
made
it was
chocolate.
Yeah, it was not an attractive statue. I get what they were like. I like the idea of them, like, honoring her, but it was not a good statue. No. But yeah, so, and now finally Oliver has been convinced to recruit a team, and he is a terrible leader because it's Oliver. But he eventually is convinced that, you know, he needs to have his team invest in him so he reveals his identity, which was kind of a fun scene. I liked that. But so we've got Wild Dog, who hates his name. We've got Evelyn Sharp, who is the fake Black Canary after Laurel's death. And she's going to be Artemis. We've got Curtis, who wanted to be recruited after he got beaten up, which was horrible.
Yeah.
Protect Curtis, 2K16. and then Ragman, who showed up in the last episode, and whatever effects they're using when he talks, I can't understand a word he says, which made recapping that really hard.
I had a little bit of difficulty understanding as well. Like, when he takes the rags off, I'm like, oh, much better. I can understand everything you're saying. I think they just turned the effects up too high. Like, dial it back a notch. Because it's cool. Like, the actual distortion in the voice is, like, interesting the way that they've done it this time. But they've turned it up way too high. So it becomes very difficult to hear what he's saying. And that's kind of important.
Yeah, and there's gonna be some conflict between him and Felicity, I assume, because he is the sole survivor of Haven Rock, which is where that one nuke that Felicity wasn't able to stop, and she shifted its target. That's where it hit. So it really was not her fault. Like, blame Damien Dark because he shot off nukes.
Yeah,
but she feels a lot of guilt for that, and so realizing that he is the only survivor is gonna be hard for her. And if he finds out, I imagine he'll have some issues with her too, even though, again, it's really not her fault. But
because I wonder how much that he knows about the fact that that wasn't the original target.
Yeah, he knows enough to find out, like, that company that was sponsoring the community health event had, like, one of their subsidiaries created the nuke or some of the tech that was in the nuke. I didn't quite follow. But so, like, he tracked it enough, which shows he's resourceful. So seems to know. And, you know, she was like, it was Damien Dark's fault. He's like, yeah, but he wouldn't have had the missiles to shoot. So, like, there seems to be awareness that Damian Dark is the one who did it, but not all of the inside stuff going on. So I imagine that'll come to a head eventually. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that she'll be honest with him and admit to it? And they have she tries to have, like, a heart-to-heart with him, and she'll try and communicate and have a conversation.
On Arrow? No. Because I've watched the show for 4 seasons? No.
Oh, you would hope at some point. Because I think the major conflict is going to be come from the fact that she kept it a secret versus her being upfront about it.
Yeah. So I imagine that'll happen. And then Diggle is off being in the military, and he goes on a mission to recover one of the nukes that did not go off because of Felicity and her dad. But his higher-ups are corrupt. They decide to steal it instead of recovering it, and they shoot. They kill this poor kid who was on his first mission. And Diggle had to give the pep talk to. They shoot him in front of Diggle and then blame him for it, and they say they're all gonna testify against him in a court martial. So he is being framed for murder. So I feel like, you know, Diggle went back to the military to find himself, basically, after he killed his brother, and he found corruption. So that didn't work.
Yeah.
But I could see this being the reason, you know, he comes back to Team Arrow, like, if he's dishonorably discharged from the military or something.
Because that also will remove that as, like, an option entirely for him to be able to retreat to, so.
That is also going on. But, so, I feel like they have said, and I can see, that they're making a concerted effort to kind of go back to what was working earlier on in the show, and I feel like so far not bad.
I'm mostly frustrated by Oliver, but that seems to be the ammo for the show anyway. I'm almost consistently, like, frustrated by Oliver.
That's kind of just a character trait.
Yeah, get your shit together, Oliver.
Exactly. That's the subtitle, Arrow. Get your shit together, Oliver.
So, yeah, but there are glimmers of things that I'm, like, really interested in. I would not be entirely shocked if Thea ended up being Maya eventually.
Honestly. Man, she is the only one with her shit together, basically.
Seriously.
Which, they started airing reruns of Arrow on TNT on the weekends, so I was watching season 1 a couple weekends ago and was like, man, look how far she has come.
Yep. God, I love
Thea. Yeah, so, I was really not all that excited about Arrow, and I am more excited than I was, I'll say that. I'm still very cautious about it because I enjoyed the first half of season 4 and then it fell apart. So I'm going to remain cautious, but I've kind of liked what I've seen so far. So we'll see what happens, but I have not hated this.
Yeah, same.
And then finally, speaking of Oliver, Legends of Tomorrow, Oliver appeared in the Legends of Tomorrow premiere.
He did, which worked incredibly well. I love the way that they dealt with this premiere episode and introducing Nate Haywood. I thought it was really cool, like them sitting down at a table with Mick drinking beer, basically.
Mick was the MVP of that episode.
Oh my god.
Like,
seriously here for Mick in this episode. He was so great. Basically being our narrator and explaining what happened. And I love it. I love it.
He was so good for the whole episode. He just had one-liner after one-liner.
It was great. Ugh.
He's like, I love roasting Nazis.
I did not expect to be as emotionally attached to Mick as I am.
I know he had. I was just reminded in that just of what a sneaky, well-written arc he had in season one with the whole becoming Kronos thing.
Yeah.
I had, you know, he started off as a complete caricature, and they did such a subtle job creating this really good arc for him. And so he was one of my favorite parts of this episode. He was really great.
Yeah.
But we meet Nate Haywood, who is our new hero. One of our new heroes. We're going to have 87 new heroes this season. But he has realized he is a time historian, basically, and he realizes that the team is in trouble. So he goes to Oliver because he uses normal people logic to be like, hey, you're the Green Arrow.
Yeah, which, finally, a sensible character.
I know, he's like, it doesn't take a PhD to look at the calendar and realize you come back and a week later Robin Hood shows up.
Love it. I love him already. I'm like, yes, yes.
He fits so well with the quirkiness that they're going for, but he also brings just kind of this new expertise that nobody else has. Like, they have lots of science and technical people, and you've got Sarah who can kill people, but they don't have, like, you know, he's a historian, which is something they don't have, and is helpful if you're trying to keep time intact.
Yeah, definitely. Especially someone who is very good, gonna be very good at research and being able to figure things out, especially when there are these aberrations in time as well. Like, he's gonna know what the actual aberration is. He'll be able to pinpoint it a lot faster and so on. But I'm super into him already. I also felt so bad for him because every time he met a new person, he, like, ended up getting hurt.
I like it. It was great. So I enjoy him a lot. So good introduction to him. He was very cute. Mm-hmm. Sarah, who is the queen of my heart, is, they are, I love how much they are like, Sarah likes to sleep with ladies, and she's gonna sleep with ladies all the time.
Yeah.
She sleeps with the queen of France, and then she seduces, like, the entire town of Salem.
Brilliant.
Oh, that was great when she's like, they're trying to hang her, and she, like, does, like, to the girl. Like, it's so good.
Yeah.
But she also is having a good, I'm really into this, where she has been tracking Damien Dark through history, because if she can kill him before 2016, he is not able to kill Laurel. And I am so beyond here for that. And she was one of the best of the League of Assassins, and Damien Dark is one of the best of the League of Assassins. So I kind of love the idea of putting them against each other, and they got a fight before Sarah had to leave, which was awesome. But you could see, you know, he's filing that away for the future.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm super into this.
Yeah, same. I really, really like it. And, like, one of the relationships I was most invested in last season was, like, her and Captain Cold. So seeing her, like, seducing her way through history is great. But I also kind of felt like I missed those two in this episode a little bit as well. Even though, like, this whole episode was just really solid in general. But I feel like her looking for revenge on Damien Dark was a no-brainer. Like, it made so much sense. Like, she would. Let's be real. So
yeah. So Laurel's death is ramifications across multiple shows, yeah, which is good. And because Katie Cassidy is going to be around, I wonder if that means Sarah will get her revenge in some way. I don't know. It's going to depend on how they decide to bring her back.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if this is going to be what brings her back. Like, if they will stop Damien Dark before that point, or will that have too big an effect on everything.
Yeah,
like
that would erase an entire season of Arrow.
I mean, I wouldn't really be disappointed. Yeah,
a really terrible season of Arrow. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I don't know, but I'm here for that. So here's my question, which I'm very confused by. Are we supposed to assume that Rip is dead at this point?
I don't know.
Because it makes no sense. Like, they said it doesn't seem like he time scattered, but, like, the nuke hit the Wave Rider. He was standing next to Mick, who was fine.
Yeah.
So.
So he would have had to have been fine, and Gideon should have been aware of him. Like, that should be a thing that happened, unless the nuke knocked out things temporarily and they came back. The message seems to suggest that he believes that he's still gonna be alive after the nuke hits. Like, so
I thought the message was like a final farewell.
Oh, see, there was the bit where he was like, I have faith that, like, you'll find me again somewhere in time.
Which I assumed meant, like, while they're time traveling, they'll run into him.
Oh, okay.
Like, a past version of himself.
But they shouldn't really interact with, like, a past version of him.
But have they ever paid attention to the rules?
No, that's very true. I don't know what's going on.
Like, I'm not sure what they're looking for us to take from that, because, you know, it makes no sense for him to be dead, but then they're like, well, there's no evidence that he time scattered, so yeah. I'm confused, but mostly I don't like Rip very much, so if he's gone, like, I don't mind all that much. He really has not been in, like, any of the promotional material, which is interesting.
I wonder if he's going to be, like, trapped somewhere in the time stream.
It could be.
Like, if he tried to time scatter as the bomb hit, and the bomb affected something, so he's maybe trapped in a between place. Like, he wasn't able to fully land somewhere. He's kind of in that space between.
It could be, but it seems like they're just going to go on as though he was dead.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was very confused because the way it played out just didn't seem to line up with the conclusions they were trying to make us draw. So I'm not really sure where we're going with that.
Yeah. I don't know.
But we'll see. But, you know, I feel like Rip was one of the weakest parts of season one, so if they're getting rid of him, more power to them.
Yeah.
Honestly. And then, so they change history to stop the Nazis from getting the bomb, basically. Mm-hmm. And then the Justice Society, I wrote Justice League, I meant Justice Society, shows up at the very end. And that was not in the screener, that last scene.
Oh, was it so not?
It was not in the screener, so I went, what? When they showed up, because I had watched the screener and written my recap based on the screener, and then they weren't in the screener, so I went, oh my god!
Sneaky!
I know.
Sneaky.
They said the screeners were, like, rough cuts, so there were slight differences. Like, in the screener, Rip did the opening monologue, but in the actual episode, it was Stein.
Yeah.
So there were a few little differences, but that actual last scene with the JSA showing up was not in the screener that I watched, so I made a loud noise.
They looked so impressive as well. I was like, wow. This is
so I laughed a little bit when you're like, we are the Justice Society of America. I was like, that was the most stilted delivery ever.
But also I would believe it of an American super team.
True. Like,
sorry, America. Like, I love you guys, but you would announce your presence before.
And in the 1940s, that, like, yeah, I buy it. Okay, so here's my question. Mm-hmm. I saw this in a comment on one of my recaps, and I think it's a good point. The Flash is looking at, like, you change history, look at all these horrible things that happen. And then Legends of Tomorrow is, like, changing things willy-nilly. So what's our message about messing with history, messing with the timeline?
It's really complicated because I feel like in The Flash it's very localized things that are changed. But the things that are being changed in Legends are, like, huge historical moments that someone somewhere is going in and trying to, like, they're already going in and changing the timeline. What the Legends are doing is trying to put it back, or at least putting it back as closely as they possibly can to what was already there, so it has smaller impacts. It's really, really difficult to be like, what is the message here? Because it's not really the Legends that are going through time and changing it. Someone else is going through time and changing it. They're trying to put it back. So you kind of have to stop and think, well, if this person is traveling through time and changing it, are they supposed to just let it all happen?
But they're not very careful in their attempts to
fix things. Yeah, they're not particularly great time masters and diplomats, right?
Exactly, which, like, for Barry, we're like, you moron, look at all how much you're messing things up. And then these guys are like, oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I feel like it will have consequences eventually. I mean, it has had some, particularly with, like, the time scatter and Rip being gone and some other stuff, but I feel like it's something that will probably play out over the season. I don't think right now there is any solid message one way or the other about what is right and what's wrong, because we don't know how much history has been affected yet.
It's all very strange.
This is what happens with time travel shows.
I know, so it kind of gives me a headache. Mm. But can we just have a moment of appreciation for the frickin' T-Rex that was chasing Rey?
Right?
And how did Jax keep his iPhone charged for 6 months?
Right! I was thinking that same thing. Like, how is it still working? I just need to know how.
Did you invent electricity in 821? Like, what happened?
Have they used, like, their power somehow to charge it?
That could be.
We're probably not going to get an answer to it. Yeah. We're probably never going to get an answer to that unless we, like, hunt down the creators and specifically ask, like, how did he charge his phone?
And they're going to be like, oh.
Yeah, they're gonna be like,
oh, we thought it was a funny line.
Yeah.
like you realize it's been like 6 months and these things drain in like 5 hours. Like,
yeah, 5 hours if you're lucky, and if you're not playing Pokemon Go. I mean,
well, I guess there are no satellites or anything to use your data on, so.
Yeah, but it still wouldn't last 6 months.
I know, so that was my thought. I was like, not picking at anything, but, like, how did he keep his phone charged? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah, so Legends was fun, and Mick is a treasure.
Yeah.
And that cracked me up when he was, like, they come out of France, and he was like, at least I didn't screw up. And then Rip pulls out the chain and he's like, stealing isn't screwing up.
Nobody caught him doing it, so it's not technically a lie.
And he didn't mess up because he intended to do it the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Mick is the best. Who knew Mick would be such a treasure?
Yeah. Who knew we would be as attached to him as we were to, like, Captain Cold? Like, what the hell?
Oh, I missed Captain Cold. Same. He's going to be on The Flash soon, though.
Yeah. I'm just a little concerned about what they're going to do with his character.
Yeah, and I'm looking for their explanation of, like, how this fits into the whole timeline thing. Because time travel is confusing.
Yeah. It seriously is.
But yeah, so for the most part, we have, I think our TLDR is we liked the DC stuff and we're kind of apathetic about S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, basically.
All right, so I guess we can move on to our massive amount of movie news, by which I mean two stories. Yeah. just for the DC side, we got our first look at Amber Heard as the Queen of Atlantis in her awesome costume, which is pretty sweet looking. I like it a lot.
It is. I saw a really hilarious tweet, though, that basically was like, when you design an amazing costume with all of this detail, and then you remember you're in a Zack Snyder movie, and it had...
The color change.
Yeah. It had the first image where the contrast was and the brightness was turned up, so you could actually see the incredible amount of detail in this costume and the beautiful colors, and then they had, like, the actual still...
Which is super dark for no good reason.
Yeah, like you could barely make it out at all. But
the costume is awesome and she looks great.
Yeah, I'm so ready for her to be the Queen of Atlantis and also of my heart. the other bit of news is that Spider-Man Homecoming, the movie that we were... that we were very, very dubious and very pessimistic about, and suddenly I'm very excited about all of a sudden, because thanks for that, Civil War. Holy crap. It's wrapped production, according to Tom Holland, so it's in the can. It's, obviously there may be reshoots, and there's a lot of post-production to go on, but the actual principal filming of it, done. Yeah, so my opinion has changed fairly significantly about Spider-Man, thanks to Civil War. So, was not
If we ever do a Civil War special, I will have different thoughts.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. I have, like, nitpicks about it, but I think Tom Holland, like, just in general... made me excited. So, yeah. And that's it. There's not really much more to say on it.
Because we're not going to cover 6 months worth of news today. No. we're going to skip Comic Corner this week because we had so much TV to talk about.
Yeah. We're also over 2 hours.
We're also... I'm just going to say that we had a fair number of tweets asking when the heck we were coming back. Here we are.
Yep.
We're going to try and catch up on some of those special episodes that we need to do. Yes. Cough, Civil War, cough.
Cage.
I still need to finish watching Luke Cage.
Suicide Squad? Is that
I still need to see Suicide Squad. Because I had no interest in seeing it.
It wasn't terrible.
That's not what I heard.
Like, we're already over 2 hours. Everyone's going to be like, they're back, but this isn't what we asked for.
X-Men Apocalypse.
I have not seen that.
So. That's 2 hours I will never get back.
Oh, really? Was it that bad? Oh, man.
We'll get there.
Yeah. I kind of still really want to see it because I love Jubilee, and I just am super excited for Jubilee to be in a movie.
Let's just say it's all about Magneto's man pain.
Excellent. Well, I will eventually see it. I'll have to watch something when I boycott Doctor Strange.
okay, we are going to just... because it was 6 months ago, we're going to skip our last question of the week and just say, for upcoming question of the week, Donnie, would you like to read it?
Sure, I can read it. So, question of the week is, where would you like to be stranded in time?
Obviously inspired by Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes.
All right, so that is our first episode back. We had a lot to catch up on. So just a reminder, come talk to us at Hero Hype Podcast on Twitter, herohypepodcast@gmail.com. You can get us individually on Twitter, and we will be back next week because we are back. It's amazing. So we will talk to you next week. Thanks, guys. Bye.